In just over a week now, all Australian adults who want one will be eligible for a COVID booster shot if they've already double vaccinated. Those who had their second vaccine dose early in the rollout, including aged care residents and healthcare workers, are expected to be first in line. And this week, the United States began the process of approving the use of the Pfizer vaccine for children as young as 5 years old. Professor Alan Cheng is the co-chair of the government's vaccine advisory body, ATAGI. He's also professor of infectious diseases at Monash University and a former Victorian Deputy Chief Health Officer. Alan Cheng, welcome back to Breakfast.
Yeah, good morning, Fran.
The TGA has now signed off on the use of the Pfizer vaccine for Australians over the age of 18 to receive booster shots. Can you see any reason why ATAGI wouldn't sign off on it now? Can we expect it will?
Yeah, look, I can't probably say too much about it because ATAGI have provided advice up to the government, and I understand that they're considering that now, and I presume that an announcement is fairly imminent on that.
Oh, so ATAGI's already given the advice to the government?
Yeah, we delivered it late yesterday.
Okay, so the government has the advice. The Health Minister, Greg Hunt, has made it clear. In fact, he's announced that booster shots, everyone who's double vaxxed will be eligible for a booster from November the 8th or at a point 6 months after their second dose. Does everyone
need... Yeah, so I'm expecting they're just considering the parameters of the ATAGI advice, but I expect that there'll be announcements soon.
Okay. And why did ATAGI sign off? What's the view? Does everyone need to get a booster? Should we all get it if we're eligible?
Oh, look, I think the body of evidence lies mostly with older people. But again, government is about to make an announcement, so I probably can't go too much into it.
All right. Let's look sort of to the future. There are restrictions in some states for people who are not double vaccinated. And in Victoria, for instance, the Premier has already said those restrictions will stay in place for some time. Do you think that once the booster rollout is underway, restrictions should be extended to people who aren't triple vaccinated?
Look, I that's probably a matter for each state and territory government and their mandates. I think ATAGI's opinion is really that boosters are really much, very much the icing on the cake, and the most important thing is to get two doses into people to make sure that they're protected, so that a booster wouldn't be mandated. But again, that's probably a matter for each state and territory to consider.
Well, I guess it goes to the efficacy of it. I mean, what's the point of not mandating the booster if the efficacy of the first two, diminishes so quickly and so much that we need a booster?
That's something that's probably an important point to say, that the first two doses does diminish somewhat, but mm-hmm. it isn't. It's not complete, so it doesn't go down to zero. So it's not like being unvaccinated. So the two doses give substantial protection. There is a bit of a waning over time, and that's restored by boosters. But it very much is the icing on the cake, and the first two doses are the really important ones.
Can you tell us a bit more about the icing on the cake? What does the booster give us then that would, persuade people to go get one?
Yeah, so it's important to draw a distinction between protection against severe disease and then a protection against infection. Mm-hmm. And then there's protection against transmission or a reduction in transmission if you're vaccinated. So most of the evidence suggests that protection against severe disease is actually maintained for quite some time. Again, there's a bit of waning in people who are older.
Mm-hmm.
But in people that are younger, there really isn't that much waning over at least over 6 months.
From the double dose?
From having two doses, yeah. Then there is some waning against just infection, and that's mainly mild infection in younger people. And then protection against transmission, again, there's probably some waning, but then the evidence about whether that's affected by boosters is not quite so clear at this stage. It probably is, but we don't know that.
So what a booster gives is more protection against mild infection, kind of any level of infection, but also protection against infecting others.
And so it gives, it restores that protection somewhat. And then in older people, it does also reduce severe disease.
Okay. Given that then, would a booster regime be enough, do you think, to stop Australia going back into lockdown? I mean, in a place like Denmark, where 85% of the over 12 population is vaccinated, there's some reports that they're considering going back into lockdown because they've got over 1,000 cases a day. Is a booster important for that?
I mean, there are really three ways that we, control COVID. Vaccination is one of those, mm-hmm. But the other two are broadly, public health and social measures and all those lockdowns and those sorts of things. But also, some of the things that are short of lockdown, density limits and those sorts of things. And then there's also, contact tracing, so testing, tracing, isolation and quarantine is sort of the third pillar of control. So the idea is that vaccinations can take more of the preventing load and start to, and that means that we can ease some of the other restrictions.
Is it likely we will need COVID shots, let's call them boosters, every year like we have a flu shot now? Is that how you see the future with this?
Look, it's really hard to know at this stage. I think it is hoped that the third dose will give longer lasting protection than the first two doses because the antibody levels are boosted to a higher level. But the wild card in all of this is whether there are variants out there that may require their own vaccine. So we don't have that at the moment, and the Delta is well covered by the current vaccines, but that doesn't mean that other variants might emerge in the future that might need their own vaccine. So that would be, for example, a situation with flu that, the flu virus changes every year.
And
But COVID doesn't, or the SARS-2 virus doesn't change to quite the same extent as flu. So we have seen variants, but in general, most of the variants that we have are well covered by these vaccines.
I'll move on from this, but just one last question that a listener has asked. Australia's purchased supplies of Novavax. Will that fill the gap for a small number of people who for medical reasons, are not able to have Pfizer or AZ? Is there a difference here that would make that useful?
Yeah, I mean, Novavax seems to the timeline keeps getting pushed back, so we're not entirely sure when that is coming. But yeah, it is a different type of vaccine. It's a simple vaccine. It's probably a little bit more like the flu vaccine in its the way that it's constructed. It will come, there will be a use for it. But the two vaccines that we have now are very good, and really encourage everyone to get one of those two.
Sure, I'm just talking about the people who are not able to. But the US is also in the process of approving Pfizer vaccine for children as young as 5 years old, and they're talking about giving a dose that's about a third of an adult dose. Is it guaranteed, do you think, that the Therapeutic Goods Administration in Australia and Atagi will approve eventually Pfizer for five-year-olds here in Australia?
Look, we really need to see the data on that. So in young children who, as a rule, don't get very sick from COVID, we would really want to make sure that there aren't any safety signals. I understand the FDA have looked at that data already, and I expect the TGA will be looking at it shortly as well.
And is it the case that historically that if the FDA is approving something, then sometime later TGA looks at it and generally follows suit or not?
Oh, not always. It's, there are independent regulatory agencies, and there's plenty of examples where, things have been approved in one country and not the other. The FDA, obviously, that's a little bit different for COVID vaccines, but, we really need to look at this through the Australian context and, with independent eyes.
If that does happen, and I know I'm looking to the future here, so let's see how we go. There are, currently no jab, no play rules for kids in preschool and childcare for other vaccinations. Do you think there might need to be a similar policy to force families to get their children vaccinated against COVID-19 in the future? So, no childcare or perhaps even school if kids aren't vaccinated?
Look, I think we need to have a vaccine first before we even start to consider that. So I think that would be a long way off.
Just on another issue altogether, we were discussing yesterday with Fiona Patten the legislation that the Victorian government is bringing in. You're a former Deputy Chief Health Officer in Victoria. Since Victoria lifted the lockdown, coronavirus infections have fallen from more than 2,200 to just over 1,400. Do you think, is it too early yet to call this a downward trend?
Yeah, look, I mean, I think there are sort of two competing forces here. There's obviously the increasing vaccination, and, in Victoria, particularly, I think it's 10 or 15% of people have been vaccinated in the last fortnight. So their protection is really just kicking in now. But on the other hand, obviously, we've just opened up and people are interacting more. And so there's that increased potential to transmit. So these sort of forces are coming together. And, you know, it's really hard to read too much of the daily figures. But the overall impression is that the case numbers are, you know, are sort of peaking or stable in Victoria at the moment. And they look, certainly look like they're falling slowly in New South Wales and ACT at the moment.
They certainly are. Let's hope they do in Victoria. And just on that legislation I mentioned, the state government's decided to move the power, or wants to shift the power, to declare a pandemic and issue public health orders away from health experts like, you know, you were former Deputy Chief Health Officer. Brett Sutton is the Chief Health Officer. They will no longer be the ones signing off on this. It will be the politicians. In your view, is that a good idea?
Look, I think, you know, every state has a different model. And we, you know,
in Victoria, where you are, you're well-versed in that system. You were part of it. Is it a good idea?
Yeah. Look, I think there's advantages and disadvantages on both sides. I think, you know, arguably the Chief Health Officer as an expert in public health is probably more expert in assessing the situation and, you know, might be seen as being more impartial than a politician. But on the other hand, ministers are accountable and they're elected, so they would be able to take into account broader considerations outside of health. So I'm really undecided about, you know, what is the best model. The New South Wales has a model where the health minister signs off on directions, and that's been a successful model. But equally, Queensland has their chief health officer sign off on their directions, and that's worked for them.
Alan, thanks very much for joining us.
No worries. Thanks very much.
Alan Cheng is co-chair of the government's vaccine advisory group, ATAGI, and professor of infectious diseases at Monash University. And as we mentioned there, he was a former Victorian deputy chief health officer during time of this pandemic.